Diabetes Insights, Breakthroughs and Innovators. The EASD TV podcast from the annual meeting of the European Association for the Study of Diabetes.
Hello again at EASD TV. You'll see that our sofas now are full, and that's because we wanted to bring you a global perspective of diabetes. So I want to introduce you to people from a range of countries. Let me start with Xavier Fares from Argentina, then Leonardo Macias from Mexico, Abdul Basit from Pakistan, and Prasad Kachulanda from Sri Lanka. So Prasad, let's start with you. What are the big issues with diabetes in Sri Lanka?
Actually, the biggest issue is the sheer numbers and the rate of at which diabetes is increasing. We are about 2006, the adult population diabetes was 10%. And by now, it has come to 20%, doubled within just more than about a decade. So, and the pre-diabetes also similarly has doubled. So the sheer numbers are the biggest problem we see at the moment.
Let's ask you all what the numbers are in your country.
In our country, the prevalence is now 26%. With impaired hyperglycemia, another 14%. It makes 40% of the population have problem with diabetes one way or the other. So it's 33 million people with diabetes in Pakistan.
That is astonishing numbers. Xavier.
In Argentina, it's 12% of prevalence in diabetes. This is was an increase, maybe the 5% in the 2019 for the 2005. And this was for increasing obesity. There was an increase in 75% in obesity in the last 15 years in Argentina.
Leonardo.
Well, our scenario is not very different from other geographies. We have 16% of people living with diabetes. And in addition to that, we have 20% of the population, of the adult population in Mexico, living with pre-diabetes. 70% of adult population is living with either overweight or obesity in Mexico. So there is also an incoming and growing number of people who will be joining our population living with the disease. And we have a lot of opportunities there to prevent.
So you all have a problem with people who are undiagnosed. You have an increasing number of people with type 2. How about type 1?
Actually, in our part of the world, particularly South Asia, type 1 is increasing, but is not as high as type 2.
Abdul?
Same here. In Pakistan, we do see an increasing trend, but the numbers aren't nowhere near that.
It's difficult because don't have statistics for the new diagnosis, type 1 diabetes. Mm. I think it's very important a question to answer.
Very similar. We have less than 5% of our people living with diabetes who is type 1. Mm. And also the numbers are increasing recently because of a more accurate diagnosis. Many people who was previously diagnosed as unstable type 2 diabetes really is having type 1. Mm-hmm.
So absolute huge volumes. And I imagine that your health systems and government are pretty spooked by the numbers in terms of the cost. And what's the reaction of government to diabetes in your country? Abdul, let's start with you on that.
We have so kind of motivated the government now that put diabetes and NCDs on the agenda, which hasn't been there in the past. Thanks to IDF, thanks to ESD with their advocacy groups and the meetings at SECA and WHO. So these stakeholders have played their role. So now at present, as we speak currently, we have got a concept paper floated in the government to have a grant at least for screening of people with diabetes. That's the start with people with diabetes in Pakistan. We do have management at a public sector government hospitals, but 20% or less than 20% of the people go to the government hospitals for medical services. Mm. So 80% is out of the pocket expenses, which is pretty tough for the public.
Yeah. Prasad.
Actually, the Endocrine College and the Sri Lanka College of Physicians, Medical Association, all have got together and kind of made a lot of advocacy work, which has pushed government to establish a NCD directorate and a unit, and then people are provided free healthcare for diabetes. But again, there are a lot of challenges because the state of the art, the new evidence-based medications are not available for everybody in the free healthcare sector. And also screening for complications like microalbuminuria, although available, but you know, they are sparsely available. And so we need a lot of, you know, resources to manage this epidemic of diabetes as well as the complications.
Leonardo, how is the Mexican government tackling this?
Well, the burden of disease from the spectrum of diabetes, obesity, and its complications is huge. So the Mexican government has declared an epidemiologic emergency and allocated resources to cover for expenses directly related to obesity and diabetes. And of course, there are not enough resources. We have new medications, we have new resources that are not necessarily reaching our population. We have a shortage of access to those medications. And of course, we have a shortage of human resources dedicated to treat diabetes. We, as a society, the Mexican Society of Endocrinology, are, of course, advocating for allocating more resources and optimizing whatever we have to make this more democratic and make more people being able to access.
Xavier, what about Argentina?
In Argentina, we have some laws for diabetic patients, and this law cover some medication, not all the medication, but the new technologies and the new drugs is difficult to cover. The government in general make the topic of education more important. They have some campaign for educators and for new guidelines to do new things, and these are the more important campaign in our government.
So prevention on a population level is critically important.
Yes, yes.
In your countries. Yes. And how is that? You've said, talk about educators, but there's also other things like, I think I'm right in saying, in Mexico, do you have a fizzy drink tax? You have a sugary drink tax?
Yes, it was implemented a few years ago. It's not necessarily reducing the consumption of sugar drinks. However, people is more aware of what nutrition means in their health. Part of those resources are being allocated to prevention, but not necessarily everything. We still need to do a lot of public policy changes to make those resources being available for prevention.
Yes, it was extraordinary because the UK also has a sugary drink policy. And actually what happened was they were threatened, the manufacturers, with having a surcharge on their drinks if they were over a certain percentage mm-hmm. of sugar. And what they all did was they reformulated their drinks.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody knew there was less sugar in them. And they still drank them. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of by stealth. Mm-hmm. And that was an important learning for us. What other population measures taking? Abdul?
We in Pakistan also managed to get this sugary drink taxed more and higher. And so was cigarettes also taxed higher, because we believe that cigarette also plays a role in diabetes and NCDs. We have a very active campaign for breastfeeding, because we believe, and the data suggests, that those who are not breastfed, they get prone to diabetes. Mm. So we are creating awareness for birth weights, because healthy mothers, if they deliver healthy babies, those babies are less prone or programmed for diabetes. These are all preventive programs. Finally, what we have done is developed a risk score, which is taking 30 seconds to find your own risk, whether you are diabetic or not. And we are disseminating it through all platforms, multiple stakeholders, through media, etc. This is a risk score as Finland or Germany or Australia have developed their risk scores. And this is, we are finding, very fruitful and practical for general public and community to be aware of their risk score and to go for preventive measures.
Actually, the government, as well as the endocrine fraternity, physicians, general physicians, everybody is trying to do a lot of work in education and prevention. But I think there's a very important necessity for a formal national diabetes prevention program, given the magnitude of the problem. So this is what we are kind of urging the governments to adopt a national level, huge program, which is costly, but it will be worth manage rather than managing, people with diabetes and the complications.
Yeah, and as I've said, the government tend to be spooked by it because they've suddenly realized what the financial implications are. What about access to technology? How difficult is that? Xavier?
It's very difficult in our country because they have an issue with the money, and I think it's very important to do some recommendations in health and not only in technology in our countries. We need to more food recommendation, exercise, and in our country it's very difficult because some people don't have time because work a lot, and for the reason I need to, I think that and the recommendation or campaigns in the government are very important.
How about in Mexico?
We have a spectrum of access that goes from only out-of-pocket to third-party coverage, third payers, or government support. And, of course, the access is very differentiated amongst those groups. The out-of-pocket or the third-party coverage is, of course, better covered than the public access. And we need to be innovative there and probably find coverage that is partially covered by the government, by the third payers, and somehow make access easier for patients. We have the technology, we have the approvals, we have the access. We are very close to a first world country like the United States. We have everything there. And we and our patients deserve the access to those technologies.
And again, it's the health economics, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you don't implement the technologies, then actually you face far greater costs down the line. How about for you, Abdul?
We have the same problem with disparity. So the rich can have everything, for example, and there is everything available as far as technology also is concerned. But for the poorer, the masses, even the simple medicines aren't there. So we have to fight on every front. So we are developing charity clinics for primary care, and we believe that primary care has to be strengthened for management of diabetes for 33 million people. At the same time, when it comes to technology, in Pakistan, there are 100 million mobile users. But when it comes to using the technology for diabetes care or health, that is unfortunately not their priority. So it is, again, on the government, on the health associations, and on public or stakeholders who are willing to manage people, to guide them, what is the best for them.
I was very struck by a presentation that we had here. A researcher who's a diabetic epidemiologist in Luxembourg, working with somebody in AI, and they had developed a screening tool which was simply people reading a piece of text into a program on their phone. And they did a pilot study with 800 people in the US, match controls, some people with type 2, others not. And they got 75% success rate in picking up people with type 2. So it's kind of those things AI can do that might be the key to finding the undiagnosed, but also in educating them. How about you, Prasad?
Actually, we did some work on, looking at risk scores and so on. But the issue is when the population prevalence exceeds a particular threshold, I think these sort of, surrogate measures are not very helpful. Because thing is, then your population, the prevalence is so high, and then you tend to, miss a lot of people if you use these risk scores and so on. We have done some work about 15 years ago where the risk scores were performing very well. But now we did the same recently, validate the risk scores. you get a whole lot of false negatives.
Yeah.
So, which is dangerous because the given the blood glucose test is not very expensive. I would rather recommend doing a blood glucose even by a glucometer rather than adopting other surrogate measures in screening the population, because otherwise you might miss whole lot of, you know, diabetic patients. But having said that, with regards to technology, actually, technology is very useful for kids with type 1 diabetes, pregnancy-related diabetes, where you need very good strict control. So at least for these selected categories, if we can embark on providing some useful technological measures like, you know, at least flash monitoring.
So prioritizing.
Really rather than the entire, because it's not cost-effective and possible to give to the entire population.
Okay, I want to move it on to therapies, because obviously the huge success of incretin-based therapies, which actually have... it's not just the weight control and the glycemic control, it's also these extraordinary range of benefits we're seeing beyond those things. How about access to those?
In general, the liraglutide or analog, not weekly analog, and GLP-1 analogs are covered in Argentina. And the patient have access, but we don't have access for obesity, only for type 2 diabetes.
Leonardo.
It's quite similar. We have approved weekly and daily GLP-1 receptor analogs. However, there is a disparity in access. Some daily analogs, particularly liraglutide, has recently been introduced to the public system. So that's a huge win in the recent age. However, the percentage of people, the market share of that access is still very limited. Not more than 5% of people who might be candidate to receive a GLP-1 receptor analog is receiving it in Mexico.
And how about in Asia, Abdul?
Same. Less than 5% of those who need to be on GLP-1 agonist can afford it and get it. Mm. And there's nothing in government to give GLP-1 agonist.
Yeah, I think same. We don't have both the SGLT2 inhibitors and GLP-1 analogs in the government sector, available in the private sector, but very, you know, expensive. But fortunately for the SGLT2 inhibitors, there are generic cheaper versions where a fair amount of people can afford. So that is something positive. So even for, I think, the newer GLP-1 receptor agonists, if more biosimilar but good quality products can be made available for countries like us, I think that would be a great advantage for many hundreds of millions of people.
Finally, I wanted to find out how your involvement with EASD can be helpful to your countries and what you've gained from EASD and whether there's anything that you particularly like EASD to do. Xavier?
I think it's two things. One is education. We need education and we can do education for other doctors. And for the other hand, the investigation involved in new investigation in science is very useful for us.
So the e-learning and things like that
is very
important.
Of course.
Leonardo?
We have a standing collaboration with the EASD and our Mexican Society of Nutrition and Endocrinology. They participate every year in our society's meeting with inviter speakers that certainly make that knowledge closer to our primary care and our specialists there. And of course, in the future, we are looking forward to grow this collaboration in other ways that we can certainly leverage what is EASD has and to take that knowledge to our country.
And how about in Asia, Abdul?
We are very grateful to Professor Chantal Mathieu and EASD board that for the first time ever, yesterday we had the session in EASD, and that was called Diabetes in Asia, the Global Hub. And so this first time Diabetes in Asia study group has been officially given a chance to let their problems come to the European colleagues, and vice versa. We are inviting ESD to our next meeting in Ahmedabad in India. And the most important thing from our point of view is capacity building, research programs, exchange programs of students, as other colleagues are saying, and advocacy. In our parts of the world, advocacy is most important and powerful tool, which is badly or desperately needed, where European colleagues can help us a lot.
Actually, Sri Lanka College of Endocrinologists is having a long-term collaboration with the ESD that has helped us to bring in new knowledge, new learning from a lot of, you know, groundbreaking research. And so we are very thankful for ESD being such a wonderful collaborator. They have been parts of our endocrine annual meeting, the SLENDO, now several years, as well as we have been partly together, conducted a lot of education for not only for Sri Lanka, but for the trainees in the region. So I think in that way, we should really appreciate the efforts of the EASD, not to confine only the Europe, but to, you know, spread its wings and help other regions which need really help.
So thank you to you all. And I think I have a message for Chantal Mathieu, which is continue going global at EASD, because what you do at EASD really has an enormous impact. And there is so much to learn from how diabetes is handled in the global south as from the global north. It's a collaboration that is both is two-way. So thank you very much for watching, and we'll be with you again soon. Bye for now.
Thank you for joining us on the podcast of the European Association for the Study of Diabetes. We hope you enjoyed today's insights. If you did, go ahead and hit subscribe, and you'll always stay up to date with the latest in diabetes research and discoveries. And if you'd like to dive deeper, you can find plenty more information at EASD.org.